get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Niche Website Builder Podcast. Me, Mark here, obviously. We haven't been on here for a while. Our podcast host, James, has been doing an amazing effort and has been bringing you lots of new and exciting guests on the podcast. But since James has taken over, the podcast has grown massively. We've got a whole new batch of people that listen. We've got a massive new audience. And we thought it was time that me and Mark basically dropped by and just said hello to everyone. We are the co-founders of Niche Website Builders. If you're not familiar, we kind of run this podcast. We used to run this podcast before James came in and started bringing in some awesome guests. And we thought we'd say hello and tell you a little bit more about some of the exciting things that we've been doing at Niche Website Builders over the last couple of months. Tell you about some new exciting things upcoming and some new shows that we've got planned. And then also tell you a little bit about our exciting Black Friday deals. So, Mark, what have we got coming up in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, so if you like listening to James, don't worry, he's going to be on in a minute. If you've been listening to this for a long time, you'd be familiar with our voices as well. But we've been working on a few interesting projects. If you're not familiar, so we've been working on our big data project where we're analyzing, several thousand sites to kind of get a picture of. To answer that question that a lot of people ask is like, well, how do I get to $1,000 a month? Or how do I get to $5,000 a month? And, historically, the answer we had to that question was, well, keep going and you'll get there in the end. And that just really wasn't a very good answer. So instead, we've done some analysis on lots of sites to get a better answer to that question. So understand, how many posts you need, what's the average DR for sites that get to $1,000 a month or $5,000 a month. And we've kind of broken that down where we can by niches as well, so you can kind of get a good view on that. So we're going to be speaking about that over the next couple of weeks on our live streams. I'll mention to you the live streams we've got in a minute, but I also wanted to mention our digital PR service. So for the first time for niche site owners, we can run digital campaigns for you. It's something it's a new service that we've launched. Can get links on top tier sites. So, we've been getting links on places like Forbes, Bloomberg, MSN, New York Times. So we've been getting all these top tier links. And it's absolutely awesome service. I think something that everyone's kind of wanted, but it's just too expensive generally. A lot of people think this is something the brands do, not what niche site owners do. But we've managed to put together a service where we can get these links and get these stories in front of journalists, and we are getting links for new sites at a price point we think works. So we're going to be talking about that over the next few weeks in our live streams as well. So if you're not already subscribed to our channel, check out the description in the podcast or on the YouTube if you're looking at it. And here's the shows we've got coming. Well, actually today's show, we've got Newsjacking PR, how to use topical news stories to get links. So that would already have gone out live today as of the time of this podcast. So check that out on our channel today if you're interested. We also have our, call it a beast study update. Where are we with our monster case study? So that's on Thursday. And next Tuesday, we're also talking about the 5,000 sites that we've analyzed and what we found out about them. So the beast study update is essentially we are taking the data that we've from the sites that we've analyzed and creating our own case study out of it. So we're publishing 2,000 posts on the site. We're using aggressive link building tactics to grow the backlink profile. So we're using 301 redirects of age domains. We've done about four of those into it right now. And we're also doing digital PR link building on top of that to grow the authority of the site, as well as publishing 2,000 posts. So if that kind of thing's interesting to you, then we've got an update on that, as I say, on Thursday. So check that out. Yeah, I think that's about it for now, Adam. I suppose we right at the point of recording here, we're running our Black Friday deals, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. So we're really excited about our Black Friday deals this year. It's going to be bigger and better than ever. I mean, this is our third Black Friday now, so we've had a pretty good go at it in the past. And the deals are you can get 20% more content of every order. So that's whether you want a one-off order, whether you want to jump on a monthly subscription, whether you want us to build you a done for your website or one of our age domain packages, whatever type of package of content you want to order, then you'll get 20% more content. And that applies to bulk orders as well. So, you know, if you want to order 100,000 words, we'll deliver you 120,000 words. If you want to order 1 million words, we'll deliver you 1.2 million words. Like, there's no upper limit on how big of a package you can buy. So that's really exciting. And also, we're discounting a new digital PR service that Mark mentioned there, which is awesome. So if you want to sign up to a monthly subscription to that, the offer is 5% off the monthly payments. If you want to pay for 3 months up front, because they run in 3 month bursts of a campaign, then you get 7.5% off the total campaign package. And if you want to pay for two campaigns up front, so that's 6 months worth of activity, then you get 10% off. But it has to be paid up front to unlock that discount. And they're the Black Friday deals. We're going to be launching them on Monday the 14th. So they should have already started. If you're on our news list, our email list, you should have already got an email about these. But head on over to the website, grab yourself some coupons, apply them, and honestly, take advantage of these deals. Like, they come around once a year. If you've been holding back to loading up on content, like, now is the time. It's so cost effective when you get 20% extra content. And same if you've been thinking about new ways of doing link building, or thinking my current link building is good, but I want to take it to the next level. Honestly, digital PR is unreal. Like, it's unreal. The results we've been getting, we even got one of our clients in an actual newspaper. The journalist liked the story so much, they ran it in the actual spread. It was amazing. His picture was in there. His brand name was in there. It was great. So yeah, check those out. Head over to the website, grab your coupons and get involved.
So that's it from us for this week. But I guess now we'll hand over back to James for the for the main part of the show.
Enjoy James' podcast, guys. Chat to you soon.
Mm-hmm. Cheers. Bye.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders podcast. Today we have Debbie Cormode. So Debbie is a UX copywriter. So she focuses not just on the copy writing on the website, but she also focuses on the user experience. So we dive into user experience mainly in terms of setting out your homepage well to convert traffic and customers. We also talk about layouts of sales pages, copywriting tips within that, and all sorts of various things regarding fonts, colors, anything to do with user experience, and we cover it on this podcast. So if you are selling your own digital products or you are an affiliate for a product, this will be very helpful for you and helping you sell your products better and helping you sell other people's products better as well to increase your conversions. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders podcast. Today we have Debbie Cormode. Welcome, Debbie.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. We had to reschedule this one for a round two with crappy internet, so we've finally been able to make it, which has been awesome. But you were recommended from our previous guest as someone who's a UX copywriter. So do you want to maybe dive into a little bit of your background and what UX copywriting is?
Okay, yeah. So I am a website UX copywriter mainly. So my business is The Copy Sprite. And I started off being just a bog standard copywriter and decided to niche into website copy. And from that, UX was just a natural stepping stone. So UX stands for user experience. So I don't just focus on writing the website copy. I focus on making sure that users can get around the website very easily, because the less friction and the less frustration there is for the users, the higher the chance of conversion. So you can have the best copy, but if then the design or the user flow creates frustration, then that copy is not going to convert. So for me, jumping into UX was just a natural progression as part of my career as a website copywriter.
This is actually awesome timing, because I've just redesigned, or kind of redesigning, my website, because I got a new logo done. My first logo was on Canva, done in a few minutes. Honestly, looks like shit, but it's working. And now I've got that redone by a proper designer. The colors changed and things like that. I was, okay, so I went in and I've redesigned a bunch of things on the homepage, fonts and all that stuff. So this will be perfect. So maybe let's start. You always talk about navigating the website. So what is a simple, maybe what might be helpful is, what's something that's almost like an example of something that's too cluttered too much, and an example of maybe what would be a simple, I guess, way to navigate around a site from a homepage?
Okay, so what we're used to when we look at a website is the navigation bar across the top on a desktop website. It's the navigation bar that's across the top, and we can click on that. So we all kind of know that if you click on the logo, it will take you back to the homepage, or you've got, you know, your main navigation across the top, maybe about, the services if it's service-based, or the categorizations if it's an e-commerce store, and we can click on those and we know we can get around the website from there fairly easily. Occasionally though, when I've worked with web designers in the past, particularly with the advent of things like Squarespace, which makes it very easy if you don't know how to code or you don't know the technicalities of website design, you can use a template like Squarespace, and they've got all these fancy designs. And sometimes the navigation is like what we call a hamburger, which is the three little lines. So you get that on mobile quite a lot, because it optimizes to mobile as a hamburger. But on a desktop site, that can almost throw your user, because they're not expecting it. They're expecting to see what goes across the top. And there is a law, it's called Jacob's Law, which huge UX company Nielsen and Norman came up with. And that says when a user arrives at your website, they are looking for what they look for on every other website that they go to. So if you stray away from that, it just throws them a little bit and makes it a bit more difficult to get around your website. So simple navigation would be the navigation bar across the top. Think about your categorization. So how are you, if it's a large website, how are you categorizing your pages? Does that make sense to the user? And then plenty of links within your website so they can get from page to page very easily.
Can you have too many things in your menu bar?
Yes, you can. And also, I sometimes see navigation bars where the title is too long. So a good practice is to have the same number of words. So you might have home, about, services, blog, contact. So that's single worded phrases across the top of the nav bar. I've seen some where they've got like five or six words and it goes across the top, and you can't tell whether that's one thing to click on or two things to click on. But yeah, generally maybe I would say 6 to 8 is enough across the top. And then think about they're what we call the parent pages, and then think about the child pages underneath, how you're categorizing those underneath. And you don't want huge long navigation bars going down the screen, because again, that makes it difficult to get around. But if you can, I'm trying to think of an e-com store, for example, where you might have a clothing store. So you might have men's, women's, children's, and then if you hover over women's, it will then go out to dresses, skirts, tops, jumpers. That's a nice, easy way to get around a website, as opposed to having it all going down one very long nav bar.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is there also a limit to how much you want in your drop downs in your menu? Because, for example, so my one, I've got one category, it just has like three drop downs in there. Yeah. But like, I can imagine you can get pretty full if you wanted to maybe put articles under those drop downs too. I've got another website where my drop down actually has some of my most important articles in there, but obviously that could go on forever if you wanted to. So is there maybe like a user experience guideline for that too?
Yeah, I would say like keep it to, you don't want it going all the way down the page, because as soon as you have to scroll and look at the navigation drop down at the same time, that makes it really difficult. So you want it to not, certainly not go below the scroll. So pages like blog post pages, for example, where you might have 100 blog posts on your website, the best thing to do is really have a separate blog page where you can almost list those blog posts there, or have a search bar, just have a search bar at the top in the navigation bar where someone can go if they want to search, for example, I'm not sure what your website's about, James, but if they search, for example, if it's niche websites like we're talking about now and they want to search for something, they just type it into the search bar and it will bring up all the pages that they can look at. Yeah. That's better than trying to list everything all the way down your website.
Nice. Let's stick with the homepage. So I know many people don't pay too much attention to their homepage because they get most of the traffic to their blog pages from Google. For me, I get a lot of traffic to my, on both sides, to my homepage, but I think they come from the blog pages and go to the homepage. So I find the homepage, at least design and kind of how it navigates, is important. But maybe let's put this to, I know most of the audience are kind of display ad affiliate style websites. Maybe some have their own digital products, but let's just say, for example, the people listening, maybe they have some kind of digital product they're selling or an affiliate product they're selling that they want to also showcase. So on the homepage, what should be the first thing they see, I guess, under that navigation menu?
So the first thing we talk about is the value proposition. So before the user has to scroll down, what should be in that very first bar across the top is what you offer and the value or the benefit that the user gets from that. So, because that's what hits them first. So you don't want to just list the features. So you can list the name of your product, but you want to actually draw the reader in. You want to draw the user in to scroll the website a little bit more. So what you need to have there is the main benefit of what your product can do for the user. So there's a common phrase in UX, which is we don't want a quarter inch drill, we want a quarter inch hole. So every time we buy something, we buy it to achieve something from it, to achieve a job from it. So we don't want to necessarily buy a drill. We're not buying a drill because we're buying a drill. We're buying a drill because we want to create a hole in the wall. Gotcha. So whatever your product is, what is the job that your product does for the person who is coming to look at it, who's coming to buy it, and focus in on that. And then you're going to touch upon their main pain points, their main struggles, and it's going to make them want to read a little bit more. And a CTA button, so what we call a call to action button as well. So, you know, have that, have your primary action that you want the user to take on top of them, above the scroll as well, above the fold as well. Yeah.
Gotcha. But, and I was going to say, this kind of comes into, I guess, copywriting principles as well. And we will touch on copywriting, but we'll touch on it a bit now anyway, since it kind of mixes in here. But in that, I guess, benefits for the user area at the top of your homepage, I guess, do you have any almost headline, because it's a headline, right? Do you have any like headline formulas that you use to maybe help people create that kind of benefit line at the top of their page?
Gosh, yeah, there are loads of headline formulas out there. I've just got to try and think of some off the top of my head now, but something like, you could have like the name of your, just think of that, the main struggle. So maybe the name of your product will help you achieve, and then what it will help you achieve, or pull out their main struggle. So maybe if it's something to do with accounts, so struggling to get your accounts done on time, Xero will help you, and then pull out the main benefit of what Xero will do. So there are loads of different formulas out there, and you can actually just find them online. Copy Hackers has a really good blog post with about 10 or 15 different headline formulas that are really useful for when you're writing your homepage.
Okay, perfect. Okay, then under that area, I'm assuming that it kind of maybe depends on the website. There's probably a lot of different variation you can have on your homepage, but I guess maybe some best practices that you've seen that you like to use, what would you start to place under that hero area?
So I would think, from a UX perspective, I would think of user flow. So in order to find the user flow, then carry out what we call a little bit of empathy mapping. So that's thinking, what's the user, when the user comes to your website, what's the user saying to them, to themselves? What's the user thinking? What's the user feeling? What's the user doing? So, and from that, you can almost pull out the most important questions that the user will have when they arrive on your website. And that's the order that you want to have your website details in, the most important information along the top, and then guiding them down to the action that you want them to take. So there are lots of different, it depends as well whether it's a service-based website or an e-com website. So with an e-com website, I would start off probably by featuring your best sellers across the top. Get some, because the purpose of going to an e-commerce store is to buy something from that store. So draw the user in by showing them what you have at the top of the homepage. For more of a service-based website, that might be a little section focusing on the pain points and highlighting the benefits before then going into what the service offers that will make the user's life easier. There are different sections, so you need some social proof on there as well, so testimonials or reviews. That creates reliability, so you want the user to trust you. You can have some a little section about. Quite often you'll see that on a homepage. So on my homepage, there's a little section about me. It doesn't go into massive detail. What it then does is link to the about page, so the user can very easily then go and find out more about me. If it's service-based, a little bit about the products that you offer or the services that you offer. E-commerce, you might want to just throw some categorization in there. What's important for e-commerce is sometimes e-commerce, if they're holding a sale, will only focus on those products that are in the sale. And so a user will arrive at the website and think, oh, if it's a tech company, for example, that stocks, if you think of trying to think of a company like Currys that stocks computers, televisions, electricals, kitchen appliances, if they're pushing a sale on laptops, then on the homepage, they'll just generally advertise the laptops. Whereas for a user arriving at that website and looking for a fridge, they could easily just disappear off that website because they can't see anything there that's kitchen appliance related. So it's important to have a snapshot on your homepage of everything that you offer to keep the user on your side on the website.
Because that's something I was struggling with on my redesign. I haven't done that. So I'm going to ask you some more questions there. So I've got I guess you could say I've got a main product that is going to be subscription-based that kind of encompasses everything. But then I've also got some physical products now. And I didn't want to add that on the homepage because I didn't want that to take away from my main product. So would you then recommend that somewhere, even if it's further down the bottom, that I would add that just to showcase that something like that is there?
Yeah, I would, because otherwise how there's no indication that the user is going to find that information, because you're not the two most read pages on the website are the homepage and the about page. So if you don't have that information on your homepage, then your user could miss it and you could miss out on a conversion or you could miss out on a sale. So if it's not the most important aspect of your business, then don't place it at the top, but certainly somewhere down your homepage, maybe three quarters of the way down, then have a little explanation of your products and the pull out the benefits of them, what the user, the value that the user will get from using your products, and then have a link to an actual product page where they can go and find out more information about it if they want to.
Gotcha. Yeah. Perfect. I'm gonna do that after this then. That's my job this weekend. But I wanted to ask you as well about fonts. Now, obviously, people starting the websites, they can get caught up in days of just finding things like logos, font, all that kind of stuff. So I want to ask you how, I guess this is the only real way to phrase it, but how important is, say, the body font and the heading fonts? Or are there fonts that you generally look to avoid? Are there things like, I guess, WebSafe fonts like Arial, Times New Roman, and things like that? Are those things, to me, they look ugly. But I don't know if that makes a difference from a user experience perspective.
Well, you just need to make sure that somebody can read your font. So there are lots of fancy fonts out there. They're like Handscript, so handwritten fonts. Mm. But if you put them on a website, they're quite difficult to read. And if a user can't read it, they're not going to hang around very long, are they? Because you want them to get the information from your website. So you don't have to stick to what I would call the boring, samey fonts. But whatever fonts you do use, just make sure that they're readable and accessible to everybody, because not everybody coming to your site will be, you know, able-bodied. There might be somebody with a disability, like a sight disability. They might be using a screen reader. They might be using a magnifier. And sometimes with those very fancy fonts, if you magnify them, they become even harder to read, particularly like almost like the handscript ones. So just bear that in mind when you're choosing your fonts. And from a UX perspective, it's best not to have more than two or three fonts max, really, on your website. Just to keep it consistent and to keep it uniform. So maybe a font, a couple of fonts for your headlines and subheads, and then a font for your main body text, but certainly no more than three. And that, it will give your website a very distinct feel, the fonts and the colors that you choose. Yeah,
that's something I've tried to stick with and just have two, essentially just heading fonts and then body text fonts, just to keep it simple. But the other thing is colors or brand colors. I guess some of this also comes into CRO a little bit if you're trying to contrast buttons and things, but I'm assuming from a user experience perspective, there's some kind of psychology as well behind color choice. So I guess for someone who's creating a display ad or affiliate website or trying to sell whatever, are there colors that I guess you would lean towards or not lean towards, maybe depending on the niche?
I guess you could, if it's an affiliate website, you could use some of the colors that are related to the product, because it would make it stand out. If your users know the product, then they're coming to your website, it's an affiliate, it shows that you're linked to that product. It kind of builds trust, I guess.
Like if it's like a garden niche, you might go green or something like that.
Yeah. So something along those lines. But just think about the contrast. Again, if we're thinking about accessibility for maybe people with poor vision, or people using a magnifier, or even just general, even anybody's eyes will get tired if the contrast isn't great. So I see websites that use a lot of black, dark background with light text on the top. So like black with white text. It looks good. The contrast looks good, but actually it causes a lot of fatigue, reader fatigue when you're trying to read that a lot. So always a lighter background with a darker text, I'd recommend, because that's less likely to cause fatigue. And just make sure that the text is readable, because quite often on a website you will see text over an image and it's very difficult to read. And it just makes life a little bit more difficult for your user. There is a plugin actually that you can get. It's on Chrome and it's called Wave. And that's an accessibility plugin, and it's free. And if you can go to any website, and if you just use Wave, it will tell you where there are contrast issues on your website, where the contrast just isn't that good. And you can just play around with the colors then until you've got the contrast right.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I've read websites with black backgrounds and white text, and you look away afterwards and you almost have like an imprint of the website as you're looking around.
You can see it on your eyeballs, can't you?
Yeah, it's like the website seared into your brain. I want to change tack just a little bit to the copywriting side. Obviously, it's hard to, I guess, cover everything there is with copywriting just over a podcast. So maybe you want to dive into some basic copywriting principles let's do something that's based like a sales page. Maybe someone's writing a sales page for their digital product, in terms of maybe format, and then how you're trying to write and convey to sell your product. Because I think we can all get stuck in really, I guess, bland copy when it comes to trying to sell something. And you, like, for example, I think we often see it as well, even in Facebook. I mean, I see it often in Facebook ads and other random ads. And it's kind of like, so I'm in like health and fitness kind of niche, and you see some of the stuff and it's kind of like, build more muscle and get, you know, or burn more fat. It's stuff that's been used over and over again, that's lost its impact. So you know, maybe just dive into, I don't know, maybe just a few copywriting principles within that.
Okay, so the main thing to do is obviously to persuade, and to persuade you need to pull out all the benefits of your product. Now, a great way to do that is actually speak to the people that you are trying to sell the product to, or the people that you've sold the product in the past to. So that's called voice of customer data. And I would never attempt to write a sales page or a website without carrying out some voice of customer data first. So what that involves is, say I was writing a website or a sales page for you, James, I would ask you for the names of 5 customers who'd be willing to speak to me who have bought your product in the past, and jump on a call with them. And it's a very, it's not a long call, half an hour call. And within that call, I would pull out the information, things like, what were you doing when you decided to buy James's product? Because that takes them right back to the moment and brings back the emotions they were feeling when they decided to hit buy for your product or your service. I'd ask them, what had they tried before? So why didn't that work? What is it about James's product that has worked? What do you like about James's product? Would you recommend James's product to a friend? If you would, what would you say to them to recommend the product? And once you've gathered all that information, you will probably find that there are 5 or 6 phrases in there that are really good phrases to use in your copy. And they're phrases that have come straight from the horse's mouth. They've come from those people who are buying your product. And so they're going to resonate with the people who are reading your website or reading your sales page. So I would carry out that kind of data before even beginning to write. You can, if you can't interview people, you can also go on web pages like Reddit or Amazon and have a look at similar products or similar services and read reviews.
I've done that too, yeah.
Amazon, you know, you get some quite, you know, negative, slaty reviews for products on Amazon, and you can take that review and twist it on its head. So what didn't they like about this product? How can I turn that around and make sure that in my sales page, I'm kind of saying that this, if they didn't get this from the product, I'm going to make sure that they think they get it, or they will get it from my product. So that's a good hint. Another one is to think about urgency and scarcity tactics. Now, these can be a little bit sleazy at times if they're not truthful. you go on websites, things like booking.com. I'm trying to book a holiday at the minute to Iceland, and I'm looking on booking.com, and everything I look at is like, oh, 237 people are already looking at this hotel, or only 2 rooms left at price, you know.
Yeah, only 2 rooms left always.
Yeah. And that urgency and scarcity. And you just think, oh my God, well, I want to book this hotel, so I need to book it now. I don't think booking.com, I don't think it's necessarily truthful. I don't know. It might be. But when you're using those tactics in your copy, it's okay to use them, but try and make it truthful. So if you're only offering 10 places, if you're writing a sales page for a service and you're only offering 10 places, but then 2 weeks after cart closes, you open it up to another, 20 people, then that's not necessarily truthful. But it does work well. It does make people think, oh, I need this now. Urgency, scarcity. Something else just popped into my head there. Oh, value stacking. So value stacking is another tactic that people use. So that's when you throw your bonuses in. So you pay £200 for a product, but on top of that, you get a one-to-one consultation call free that's worth £200. You get a presentation online or guest speakers online. So when you value stack as well, that makes people think that they're getting something for a bargain price. They're getting more than what they're paying for. So that's another good tactic. And I would say sales pages nowadays tend to be really long, and lots of people don't put their pricing in. So I can read a whole sales page, get to the bottom, and think, I have no idea how much this is going to cost me. And I have to click on the cart to go and find out how much the cost is. So I actually don't like that. I think it's a better user experience to be upfront with your prices from the beginning. So even put it near the top of your sales page, because then the people you're going to get are the people that have got that budget to buy your product or buy your service, as opposed to leaving it making them read the whole thing and then go to cart to find out how much it is.
I've been on sales pages like that, and if I'm just checking the product out, I bounce if I don't see a price. I just want to see how much it is, then maybe consider it. And if it's not there, then I'm not even going to consider it.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's poor user experience. Yeah. And yet there are hundreds of sales pages out there who don't put the price on. And another thing as well for user experience is when you do go to cart, make sure your copy in the cart ties in with the sales page, because that's a point of friction there. You know, that's where somebody's going to hand you over the money. And if they suddenly feel, oh, hang on a minute, this doesn't actually look the same to be the same thing or the same copy or the same person as the sales page I've just been reading, they may not convert. They may decide not to put their money into that page. So having the cart and the sales page both in the same brand, brand colors or brand tone or brand voice, then that helps boost that conversion as well.
That's something interesting, because so I use, well, not anymore, but I'm still using Thrivecart as my shopping cart. I know many people in the niche website space use Thrivecart as well to sell their own products. And obviously they have a very standard checkout, checkout window and checkout thing. And I guess that was something I was thinking about too. I was like, is it too different to my website where I'd have to go in and make substantial changes to that cart, to that checkout window? But then, I guess, what do you want on there to help convert? Because right now mine is literally a picture, so they know it's the same product, and then the product name, the price, and then obviously enter your details and the usual credit card stuff and whatever else. But what else could you add to that to help increase conversions?
Is it possible to add something to Thrivecart? Can you go in and can you change the copy?
You can change colors. You can add logos, images, testimonials. You can add extra input things. You can do a whole lot of different things. You can always customize it to a full sales page like itself if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to send someone from a sales page to another sales page.
No. But if you can put your logo on there and you can use your brand colors and you can maybe even just throw a two-line review down, that is just an extra push, isn't it? If they've reached the part, they're still maybe thinking, shouldn't I buy this? And then you've got a two-line review there that talks about how great the product is. Then that's just that extra little push to then make them get their credit card out and fill in those details. So if you can do those sorts of things, I think that's enough. It's just that sometimes I've gone from website to cart and there's been no indication that that's the same. That's why I was surprised that you can do that on Thrivecart, because I've seen Thrivecart before and it looks very, very bog standard. The more you can personalize it, I think the higher the chances of conversion will be.
Well, if you're adding a review or a testimonial on there, can it be the same testimonial that was on your sales page, or does it lose its impact if you're using the same one?
I think you can use the same one. It's just another reminder, isn't it? It's just a little reminder. Okay. If you've got a different one, that might be better, but using the same one certainly isn't going to do any harm. It's just going to jog the buyer's mind again, the user's mind, that actually this is why I've got this far already. This is why I've jumped from the sales page to the car. I've nearly got my credit card out. And now actually, this is why I'm here. I do want this product.
Gotcha. And I wanted to come back to the sales page as well, because I think going through how the sales page should be laid out is also going to help translate into people who are writing affiliate reviews of a product. Even though you're not selling your own product with the affiliate and you still have to kind of rank it for SEO and cover different things there, but the copy that you write on your sales page is going to translate over to if you're going to write an affiliate review. So this should help those people too. But in terms of the layout of the sales page, how should it look? So for myself, I pick one off. So I've got Thrive Themes and they have a whole bunch of pre-made sales pages and they kind of give you the layout and I might add and change some things there. But if I'm creating it for myself, I get lost because I'm like, what the hell is going to go next? What should go here? What should go here? So it might be good maybe if you can lay out like a general structure of how a sales page should go, essentially from a user experience perspective.
Okay, so it's quite similar to the homepage on your website. You need to think about the user flow. So the most important information goes at the top. So think about the main struggle that the user has, and that needs to go in your headline at the top. So you're drawing them in straight away. And try to make your headline like something different, like a catchy bullet, so it's going to, so that it will make them stop and read, because 80% of people will read your headline, 20% of people will not, you know, only 20% will read past the headline. So you need to really draw them in with the main struggle. Underneath that, I would just go on to focus on the benefits and draw out the pain points. So pain points and benefits, there's two ways around that. Some people focus on the pain points. Things like, are you struggling with, and focus almost on the negatives. I prefer to focus on the positives. So take that pain point and turn it into, with this product or with this thing, you wouldn't it be great to? So for example, wouldn't it be great to get all your accounts done in the space of an hour? As opposed to, are you struggling to get your accounts done? Are your accounts driving you crazy? Okay. Which is a negative. Twist it around. Wouldn't it be great to be able to spend your Fridays off work because your accounts have all been done? It's that kind of twist on it. And then you would probably need a little bit about, I'd have plenty of CTAs going down the page. So maybe 5 or 6 call to actions as you go down with each section that you write. It's almost like splitting up into sections, and each section should have a CTA to give them a chance to buy. Trying to think now off the top of my head of the sales pages that I've written. It very much depends on the product and the whether it's service based, whether it's e-com. A little bit about you or the company, because you want to build trust. You want them to trust you. You want to have that reliability. So some information about who you are, your credibility. So what makes you the person to sell these products? What is it that you know? Why should they trust you? So that's always a good thing. Obviously the price. I would put the price almost near the top, or certainly in the middle of the page, to stop frustration for the likes of you and I, who hate it when we can't see the price. testimonials, definitely. So testimonials or reviews scattered all the way throughout. So starting from maybe, you know, the second underneath your main header, start with a review there or a testimonial there, and then every
I just did that the other day.
Every other section, have them all the way through, because that is a great persuasive tool. If you have the value stacking, so if you're offering any bonuses, so that can come kind of in the middle of the sales page, so people can see, oh, actually this is what I'm getting, but I'm also getting this. So some value stacking as well. From there, you might have some urgency and scarcity. So how many products are you selling at this price? When will that price run out? When does the offer run out? And then it kind of, the sales pages then just kind of repeat themselves a little bit. So maybe then another focus on the benefits, another review, another reminder that there's only so many that you're selling at this price. So I would structure it that way. But with the most important questions, just think about, okay, what questions might the user have when they arrive on this sales page, and let's get those answered near the top to draw them in. A good thing to do is have a swipe file. So every good copywriter has a swipe file, which you see sales pages that other copywriters have written, and you take a screenshot or you take a note of the URL and you keep it safe in a folder. And then when you're writing a sales page for a similar product, you don't copy it, but you've got the structure there that you can use, and you can mix and match structures. So swipe files are a really good thing to have.
I wanted to ask you about those call to actions as well. You mentioned about having multiple down the page. Call to actions can be tricky to almost to get out of just buy now, get it now, join now, kind of like boring, overused terms. Are you using different call to actions for each call to action down the page, so it's almost like fresh? And then how are you creating them?
Yeah, call to actions need to really, there's a formula that a guy called Michael, I think it's Agard, or I'm sure Agard is how you pronounce it. And he came up with a formula for CTAs, which is value plus relevance equals conversions. So within your CTA or around your CTA, we have something called click trigger copy, which are just little snippets of copy that add that extra zouche of persuasion, really, to get people clicking that button. But you need to explain the value of what they're getting and the relevance of what they're getting. So rather than buy now, think about the benefit that they're going to get from that product and try and get that into your CTA button. Whether it's in click trigger copy, which is whether it's above the CTA or whether it's in the CTA, the only thing I would say is when you're, I would never mess around with buy now buttons, basically, or add to cart or add to basket, because they are well known. We all, when we arrive on a website or a sales page, know that if I click that button, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go to the cart, or I'm going to place that in my basket, or I'm going to buy that product. So you want your CTAs to be very, very clear. So by all means, mix it up a little bit as you go down your sales page. But the very first one, I would have as buy now, or, you know, get your product here, or add to cart. And the very last one, I would have a very clear as well as buy now or add to cart. And then in the middle, as you go down your sales page, you can maybe zoosh it up a bit with the benefits. So, you know, make your life easier. Click, well, not click. I'm trying to think of, it's hard to think off the top of my head.
Somebody, yes, I want to lose weight
so
now.
Let's go back to the account system again. So if I'm thinking about accounts, so get accounts made easy. Okay, so, or yes, I want my accounts made easy. And then they can click on that. But certainly have, you need to have some in there, which are buy now or, you know, add to cart, because they're the clear actions and people know exactly what they're doing when they click on those buttons.
Gotcha. I've got on my sales page my top seat, or my top two call to actions. While they are call to actions to join or buy the product, I actually have them jump link down to the pricing table. Now, I did that because I was like, okay, well, no one's clicking that to buy because they haven't actually gone through the page. Is that something you would recommend to do then, or would you have that button send them straight to the checkout?
Whatever your, wherever your CTA takes them to, I think that needs to be clear on the button. Because they're clicking it for a particular purpose. So if they're going to click buy now, they're clicking it because they want to buy it. So what I would maybe change that to see pricing options. And then you can go down, you can take them down to the pricing options, and then you can have a CTA that says buy now. But if you think about, again, I'm going back to accessibility, which is a huge user experience, section of user experience. If you're thinking about a screen reader who, you know, they, when they land on something in the screen and the screen reader says buy now, that's what they think they're doing, you know, and then you're jumping them down to a section that isn't where they put in their payment details. It can be confusing. So I would just change that to see pricing options, and then it will take them to the pricing options, and then they can hit the buy now.
Perfect. Here's coming back to the the button colors. So we talked about the branding colors and being with a niche, but obviously, typically we want the button, or at least the call to action colors, to be contrasting with the main colors. Do you just have, throughout your, I guess, website, is it only buttons that lead to checkouts that you have these contrasting colors, like on the sales page, and then everything else is maybe brand color, or are you looking at, okay, whatever I want people to click on, that is going to be that contrasting color?
Just so the CTA is clear, that's what I would say. And there's lots of psychological reports out there that say, you know, green make people want to take an action, red maybe not necessarily so. For me, I would say it's what you've got on your call to action button and the copy leading up to your call to action button that's going to make people convert or not. You know, the colour really is not going to make it. You can do some testing. So you can certainly do some, you can do some A-B testing, different colours. But for me, as long as the CTA button is clear, so it's in the shape of a button as well, so you can see, actually, I can click on that, that is a button, rather than necessarily a link, maybe an underlined link or anything like that. So just make sure it stands out as a CTA and a contrasting colour to the rest of your website, then I think that's fine. And then, if you want to look into it further, do some A-B testing. But it's the copy and the language that you use on your CTA button that will get the conversion. So don't be wishy-washy either. We have to be bossy with CTAs, you know. None of this, please book here, or anything like that, you know, book here, do it now. So really bossy language on the CTA. And think about whether it's on desktop or mobile, because we tap on a mobile, but we don't tap on a desktop. We click on a desktop. So if you're using language like click or tap, or where's where's it being viewed? Yeah. So just think about that as well.
Okay. Interesting. And then I guess with that, I guess more assertive, bossy style copy, that's how you're writing your copy as well throughout the text, almost like you are the authoritative person. I think you should say confident in what it is, and not kind of that passive voice.
Yeah, active voice, not passive voice, which is always a tricky one to do. People get a bit confused with
don't
that.
Maybe describe the differences there.
So active voice and passive voice, I always say kind of use the zombie test. So if you write a sentence and you can have the word, you can add the phrase by zombies to it and it still makes sense, then that's passive voice. So for example, the tea was made. If you can add by zombies there, the tea was made by zombies. Mm. So that's passive voice. Whereas if it is zombies made the tea, that's active voice. Because zombies made the tea by zombies doesn't make sense. So that's a good little test to do. But sometimes you can't avoid passive voice, and that's absolutely fine. Yeah. But try to keep most of your copy in active voice if you can. You need to be bossy, but there's a difference between bossy and arrogance. And that's, you think about the audience that you're writing for. So what kind of brand voice do you have, and keep your brand voice consistent, and then think about who you're writing for. So there's a line that you can overstep between being assertive and bossy to being very arrogant, and make your copy. Yeah, I know you said that, because it's got to be, you've got to show your credibility. Copy should always focus on the user. So there should be far more use, the word you in there, than I. So cut out the I's, so I can do this for you. I can make sure you this happens, and focus on the you instead. You will get from this. And that's a good way to raise your conversions.
I love that idea you mentioned of brand voice. And I think we can all maybe rattle off some websites that people read, or businesses people follow that have a specific way that they, articulate whatever it is they're selling or talking about or anything like that. And I think that's becoming more and more important, at least within this niche website building space, because people are creating display ad affiliate websites. A lot of them, you know, with no real substance behind them. It's more, hey, here's the 10 best this, 10 best that, some informational stuff, kind of rewritten just to get someone to click on an Amazon link or whatever. But this whole brand voice and building a brand, I think, becomes quite important. So do you want to maybe dive into, how do you establish a brand voice, and what really is, or I guess what encompasses a brand voice?
Okay, so I'm no expert on branding. You know, I'm not a branding expert. But I would start by thinking about your values. So what are your brand values, and how do you want to be perceived? So your brand is almost like what someone says to you says about you when you're not in the room. So do you want them to say that you are funny, that you are caring, that you are honest, that you are authentic, honest, similar thing. So think about the values. It's almost like turning your business into a person. So what would you want people to say about that person, about your business? And then try and convey that in your copy. So for example, if you are a humorous brand, then being witty in your copy, then that will work. But if you are, for example, maybe you're a funeral parlor, that's not going to be the right brand voice for you. Because you know, your target audience are not going to appreciate that. So think about who you're selling to, and think about the language that they use, the personalities that they have of the people that you're dealing with. And if you can resonate with their personality and their language, then that's the kind of brand voice that you probably need to go towards?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I know a lot of people say not to use, I guess, comedy or funny things within your copy, because people reading it might not get it. What's your take on that then? It doesn't just depend on kind of, as you mentioned, that brand voice you're trying to portray.
Yeah, it just depends who your audience are. There are places for comedy, and comedy can work very well in copy. And I think we kind of know of brands that use a lot of comedy in their copy. But also there are times when you want to kind of step away from that. So for example, if you are using comedy in your copy, when you have an error page, for example, a 404 page, or when you have your contact page for complaints, you don't want someone coming to your complaints page and being faced with almost like tongue-in-cheek comedy. That's just going to throw them into an absolutely foul mood, isn't it? So there are that's what we would call is tone. There's a difference between brand voice and brand tone. So brand voice is almost like your personality. The tone changes with the context. So my personality doesn't necessarily change, but my tone might change, whether I'm angry or whether I'm happy or whether I'm sad. So think about where your copy's going and how that might affect the tone of your voice, of what you're writing. But I think there's certainly a place for comedy in copy. I know several copywriters who write really witty copy, and it's funny to read, and it engages you, and it sucks you in to want to read a bit more. And I quite personally, I like that kind of copy. You know, I like brands that have that kind of copy, but you do, it won't work with everybody. And so that's why you have to think about your audience, because certain members, certain audiences will not like it. The same with jargon, and the same with I don't want to say the word slogans, not jargon, like acronyms and things like that. Mm-hmm. So Gen Z almost have a language of their own sometimes. So if your target audience is Gen Z, then you can use that kind of language. But if you know there are others coming to your website to buy from you, maybe from older generations, and they're not going to understand that language, then maybe steer clear of it. So it's really narrowing down who you're writing for and the kind of language that they'll understand.
That reminds me of old fitness blogs about a decade ago, before you needed to have hardcore SEO to be followed and seen. A lot of those were very popular because of the way they were written, and they were funny, they went against the grain, things like that, and you would read them because they would be that engaging. I guess it's a little more difficult now within SEO and all that kind of stuff, but within maybe your sales copy, that could be something, at least if it, as you mentioned, hits that target audience, then you're probably good to go.
Yeah, I think even with SEO, you know, you can still build a very distinctive brand voice, even while getting your keywords in there. Because remember, Google's looking for helpful content. It's not looking for, you know, keyword stuffed content. So you're still able to do that and still get found on Google.
Yeah, perfect. Before we end this podcast, I wanted to jump into email and email opt-ins and things like that. And in terms of a user experience there, I guess in your experience with email, well, I guess with any opt-ins, do you have any advice in that area?
Yes. Yeah, so on a website, let's talk pop-ups. Okay, pop-ups, and they pop up. Do you want to join my newsletter, my email list? When they pop up within 3 or 4 seconds of landing on a website, that's poor user experience, really. You want to give someone time to have a look around your website and find out what it is that you do and what it is that you offer before you jump in and say, hey, do you want to join my gang? Because otherwise they just don't have enough time to find out who you are. So with a pop-up, I would leave it at least 10, 15, 20 seconds before you start popping that up on a website. Sometimes it's good to use an exit pop-up. So when the person is about to leave the website, then have a pop-up inviting them to join your email. And with your sign-up form, make sure that you're adding information, so you're adding value, so they know what it is they're getting. So rather than just join my email list, well, what do they get from your email list? So do they get tips? Do they get discounts? How often are you going to land in their inbox? Is it once a week? Is it three times a week? Give them the heads up so they know exactly what it is, what they're signing up for. What else can I include in there? Only ask for the information that you need. So emails will often ask, email pop-ups will often ask for first name and last name. I don't think I've ever used the last name in an email that I've sent out to my subscribers. I only ever use the first name option. So think about that. Do you really need their last name or do you just need their first name? And also make sure on your email list they have an option to unsubscribe if they want to. And that is not buried deep at the very bottom of your email, so they have to hunt around to find it. Make unsubscribing easy if it's not for them as well. And also reassure them that you know that their data is not going to go anywhere else, because we worry, don't we, these days about giving too much data away. A little bit of reassurance, a little bit of copy on your sign-up form that reassures them that you're not going to send them any spam, that their email address is not going to be forwarded on or sold to anybody else or any third parties as well.
Gotcha. I guess the other question to this is design. So I recently saw a previous podcast guest, Nick Jordan, he showed me one of his designs and they're very clean and simple, like literally like a box, a headline, and then whatever it is to sign up. My current designs, I think, might be too designy. And they have like an ebook cover mock-up and then the headline and then that and some colors and stuff like that. So I'm kind of like, maybe I need to split test those two. But I guess from your perspective, do you have maybe a preference in terms of email, I guess, opt-in designs?
Do they get an ebook when they sign up for your emails?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, then I think that's, you know, if you've shown an image of what they're going to get, I don't think that's poor design. I think that's showing the person, look, sign up for my emails and this is what you're going to get. It's showing value, it's showing relevance. So I think as long as you're telling the users and you're being straight with the users as to what they're going to get and how they're going to get it, then I think that's fine. There's a space for very straightforward design, but within very straightforward design, perhaps does he have the information in that design that the user needs to make a conscious decision to give away their email address? And that's the most important thing. Are you giving them all the information they need without overloading them to persuade them to give over their email address? So I think your design sounds okay, as long as it's focused, as long as it's not giving them false hope with an ebook that they don't then get.
No, perfect. I think we covered pretty much everything I had to ask you there on UX copywriting. But if someone wants to follow you and keep up with what you're doing, where can they find you, Debbie?
They can find me on Instagram at the copy sprite. It's like at the_copy_sprite. I know it's a tricky name. I came up with it, the copy sprite copywriter, and ever since I've been like, why did I choose that name? It's just like a massive mouthful. Or I'm on LinkedIn. Again, that's under Debbie Cormode rather than my business name. I'm on Twitter as the copy sprite, or there's my website, copysprite copywriter.com, and you can find me on there as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks for coming on and sharing these tips, Debbie. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. It's been lovely talking to you, James.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.